Conversation avec Athènes, un projet de Florent Frisé et Eric Stéphanie, avec le soutien d'HD Kepler et du Radio. Une série de rencontres dans l'esprit de la bohème et des cafés néons grecs rassemble les voix de la scène artistique athénienne.
Τον Ιορδανία Κερενίδη και τον Πιερ Γιώργιο Πεπέ. Ευχαριστούμε πολύ και εσάς που ήρθατε και τον Χριστό που μας φιλοξενεί.
Καλησπέρα, good evening. So we are very pleased to host you tonight, Ιορδανίς and
Pierre Giorgio, sorry.
That's okay. So to briefly, I wouldn't go through your whole biography, but just to say that you have different activities as collector, but also as a co-founder of this phenomenon, Bionor, here in Greece, based in Anafi, I mean, settled in Anafi. What can I say? Like, nothing much. Maybe we'll come back later on your own respective activities, beside the fact that you're also collecting. So I will let Florent start with the first question, as usual.
So we had the pleasure to meet you this summer, Eric and I, and Afi, when we came to Phenomenon in Alley. And my my post impression after all this, it's I saw phenomenon like a celebration of art, of the island, of the artist, and also of the audience. And I could say I participated to Phenomenon 3 at some point. So I wanted to ask you if it was something you had in mind when you built the project, like, you will host people here, and how you will manage to host them.
Okay, I think we will be taking the microphone around.
Yeah, there is one, it's working.
So, thank you very much for inviting us here. Thank you all for being here. I guess the question is Phenomenon a celebration? I mean, I guess it is a celebration. But I think what we wanted to achieve with Phenomenon is to create this space where people can try to create connections and relations between them and with the island and with the people of the island, the artists that come, even the people who are there just for holidays. And try to create a space where you can create new meanings, you can create new effects. And for us, it's more than just doing an exhibition, or it's more than just doing an artist residency. As you said, it's create a community of people that are together for this time. And for us, this is kind of the beginning of a longer term relation that we try to cultivate with all the participants. So I think this is what we want to celebrate also in the spirit of Phenomenon.
Yes, no, absolutely. And I think also a celebration of the island, as you
I go closer?
Yeah. A celebration of the island, as you said, in the sense of getting closer to the island, understanding the island, having been there and really trying to live this period together as an experience. More than a biennale, you used it three times, it feels a little weird, but I suppose it happens every 2 years, yeah.
Actually, I have a question about, like, why did you choose the format of the biennale? And, like, this two years, like, rendezvous kind of?
Because it takes us a whole year to prepare it, so we need some time to do it. So it had nothing to do
answer.
With trying to make it a biennale, actually. When people ask us, we say that it's a project that happens every 2 years. It's hopefully not the same as a biennale. But it really takes us more than a year from the time that we choose the participants of the next edition and all the research that we do on the island, on the kind of concept that the specific edition of Phenomenon you know, tries to work with. And we spent a year trying to understand the projects, propose projects, work with the artists, so that when we get there for these 2 weeks, so even though it seems that everything happens, you know, everything is ready, it's kind of a long process that took almost a year for us to prepare. So that's why we need some time to also take some holidays in between, because it's not our job. So, yeah.
And about the what you are saying, the selection of the artists, how are you proceeding? It's because some of them are part of your own collection,
yes,
and some of them are invited specifically for the event, for the exhibition.
Yes, it's true. It's there's a number of the artists that are also in our collection. It's not a one-to-one correspondence, but it's mainly we try to work with artists and invite them to phenomenal artists that we want to get to know better, that we want to, you know, try to get to know their work better. And for us, even as collectors, it's very important, the personal relationship, right? And so being close to the artist for us is very important, getting to know them and spending that time together. This is what we get back from phenomenal, that possibility of being there with them and taking a little glimpse into the creative process, which is very important.
Just wanted to add that this is a very interesting question that we are really trying to answer ourselves, in the sense that Phenomenon is a project which is a private project in the sense that it's organized by the two of us with our team members who are here, Mirtor, Angelica, Alexandra. So the selection of the artists is also something that happens by us. And obviously there is an issue with that. So the question is, at what point, given that this project is a public project now, it's open to the public, and it's also something which is important for the island, in the sense that there are not so many cultural activities happening on the island, so there is some sort of important position of the project
within
the cultural policy of the island. What is the time or the point where the way that phenomenon is organized has to become more public, in the sense that it does not remain something which is done just by two private collectors, but it includes, for example, in the selection process or in the selection of the topic, includes a broader group of people. And this is why we're trying to discuss many different formats of, does it make sense to have a committee of people that choose the artist instead of the two of us, or would this just change completely what phenomenon is about? We're trying to understand what is exactly the right position between a private and a public, you know, presence. I don't think we have a dominant position yet, like we are not the Pinot Foundation that opens a big museum, so that even though it's a private place, we will become, you know, even though it's a private place, it needs to act as a public institution because its position is too big, right? So I don't think we are at that point, but we are trying to find ways of opening up the process. For example, including the participants that were there the previous editions, who kind of were there, were participating, and try to figure out a way to include them in the process of selecting the artists.
Coming back to the island, back to Anafi, first of all, why did you choose Anafi? Is it because it's like on the edge of Europe, like the one of the most remote islands of the Cyclades? How did it happen? Well, why Anafi?
We had been looking for a while to try and have to do a project, right? As collectors, we wanted to push the boundaries of what collecting means today, and we thought that really having a project in a place which is remote and has different conditions from the usual art experience and art institutions was important. And we traveled around the Aegean quite a lot, and then we ended up in Anafi, which was a completely different experience. The people, you know, the preservation of the island, the willingness to stay to a certain extent that way. And we decided actually one day when we were in Megapotamos at the beach, and we were looking at the history of the island and the name Anafi, which means the one that has been made visible. And you probably all know the story that the Argonauts were passing by, they thought they were dead. They thought they were dead, and they prayed for Apollo to save them. Apollo appeared, and with a dart of light, he made the island visible, and the Argonauts were saved, right? And obviously this word, Anafi, that comes from becoming visible, it's something that it's very much interests us in our collection, the passage between visibility and invisibility, which is, you know, a dear theme of conceptual art, but also today, and it's a more exception about marginality, etc. So all of a sudden, all the pieces came together that day in Megapotamos, and then the following morning we went to see Yannis at, it was Pupas Karavaki back then, and then after 2 hours we went to the mayor, and it was done. And then that was July, and then we did July, the following July of Hanoi. So that's how it started.
So this is how it started, but I think one of the main reasons why it continues to be in Anafi is because of the people of Anafi, who are all there, and we're very happy that you're all here. So I don't think we would be doing something like that if we wouldn't feel that this is something that the locals also feel that it's something that we do with them, and that phenomenon is part of what they are doing as well. So it is the island, but it's also the people of the island and how they want to deal with preserving their history, with showing their history, and also the fact that maybe they don't have the right conditions for us to do all these things. So when we're trying to figure out all together, how can we make this possibility that the island, on one hand, is developing, but on the other hand, it's doing it in a sustainable way. And we kind of feel that art has a role to play in this.
So yeah, so the first contact with the people of the island went well, and they were not afraid you will steal the island. And about the artist for this edition, if I remember well, Jason Dodge, Ilan Miles, Eva Barto, Florence Jung, Joachim Lampert, Vittorio Santoro,
David Hopkins,
Demantas Narkevicius,
Demantas,
Demantas.
David Horowitz, and Paki Bloss.
Paki Bloss.
And when and how did you arrive to this specific list? And what was the connection between all of them, if there is one or none or few?
Several.
Difficult question.
Yeah, we are not that well organized. We don't have a specific way of...
It's good to know.
This is how we do it. I think it happens kind of organically. Like sometimes we already have some names of people that we would like to invite in the next phenomenon, even before the previous one somehow. So we kind of already have a list of some names for phenomenon 4. But, and little by little, when the concept and the idea of what we want to be working on for the year of preparing phenomenon, you know, gets a little more crystallized, then becomes more and more apparent who we think that on one hand they would be interested in working in this project. Like, I don't think that this project is for everyone, in some sense that I think that for some artists it makes more sense than for some other ones. So, there's no point in inviting people if we feel that they wouldn't get something out of this experience, right? So somehow we need to find people to share a quite strong experience together and see this as the beginning of a collaboration that will continue afterwards. We try to be as representative as we can. It's not always easy, but it's something that we are really conscious about. I don't know what else.
We always involve Greek artists, and there's always someone from Cyprus as well. It's a bit of a tradition. It's also the Cypriot, and I think it's going to stay that way. But no, other than that, we really try to be aware in the selection process of our own bias. But it's a difficult question, you know, how can it's never really solved, even if you try your best.
But then I can, that makes me relate to, let's say, the question that I have in mind now is like, how do you jump from, I mean, let's say the topics of the first biennial to the last one? Is there like some connections, like links between editions? It's also a difficult question.
I mean, they're all difficult questions, but...
It's good, difficult questions are good to answer. I think the link is enough itself, somehow, and the history of the island. Like, the first edition was more about these questions of visibility and invisibility. It was the obvious theme coming from the name of Anafi, right? The second one had to do more about archaeologies and surfaces and what remains in history and what doesn't, what are the conditions that produce history. Again, dealing with the fact that there are many different layers of history in this island, and some of them are much more obvious and apparent than other ones. Like all this story of the history of the exiles, that somehow it reappeared many years later by just a chance accident of a wall falling down and some big number of photographs from the exiles appeared somehow. So all this kind of stratification of the fact that the monastery was an ancient temple and now it's a monastery and at the same place. So all this kind of layers of history was also something that started from there. And the last one, I guess it was almost inevitable that, you know, we have to deal with the fact that we are going to this island to do an art project, the moment where the political situation in not only on the island but everywhere basically it's really, really dire. So what kind of legitimacy do we have to do an art project in a period of real political urgency, and how do we deal with these questions? So this is kind of how the three, you know, editions of phenomenon happen.
So maybe that leads us to another question related to your respective jobs and respective activities. So you've done is you're a scientist, you mostly specialize in quantum physics, am I right? And you are specialized in professional ethics, and you have like a specific course of lectures at Sciences Po Paris, specifically related to the art ethics. So how both do you, what kind of consequences do they have on, let's say, your collector's choice? And then further with the biennial, you know. And maybe you can start.
Yes. So, definitely the research part, right? So for us, coming from jobs where you need to do a lot of research, it's very important. So for us, it's very unlikely that we invite an artist to phenomenon or that we buy an artwork without really researching the work and the work of the artist. So we operate in that way. And also, you know, having been an ethics professional for good part of 15, 20 years now, I can, you know, we get much more interested in questions around what does it mean today, for example, being a collector, right? Coming from all this position of privilege, history, you know, starting from mecenas, even the word patron today comes as the same root as patriarchy. Like there's a lot of luggage that comes with that. And so we are trying to look at some of those questions, that's from my side, and how, you know, even the way we approach phenomenon, the way we interact with the people of Anafi, how do you do that without, you know, in an ethical way? And again, these are questions, the answer is never easy, but that, my job helps me a lot in trying to raise those questions. Then answering them is another topic.
Yeah, I agree. No, I'm an academic, and you told me before that I should talk in a very academic way, so I'm trying not to talk in a very academic way.
No, you should, actually.
I think a very interesting part in what we do is that we always have to deal with people that come from different backgrounds, and if one really wants to do some impactful science, for example, you need to deal with interdisciplinarity. We need to be able to, as a physicist, to talk to a mathematician, to talk to a sociologist, to talk to the computer scientist. Otherwise, you know, you are just missing part of what's happening. And I think this is what is also interesting for on our side, in the fact that we look at art from a very different point of view, in the sense that we don't have an art history background, we don't have a curatorial background, but we are doing stuff with art. So it's not clear if we should be doing them or not, but we are doing them and taking the responsibility, and we are really assuming the responsibility for them. But it's exactly this kind of possibilities that come from the fact that you are not coming from inside the canon, but you're kind of an outsider trying to have a different way of looking at things, which sometimes, you know, provides a space which is a little more open for people to experiment. And this is what we also tell the artists, that we are not there to curate a show in an AFI, we're there to help, you know, give you ideas and information about the island, about what's happening, and then think of the space as a space for experimentation. Right? So I think this is an interesting thing for us.
So you are describing yourself as an ethics collector. So it's it's too paradoxical. And so what is... I read in a previous interview that... if I quote you correctly, it's said collectors, you are collectors as a creative social agent, which is very mysterious for me. That's a definition, and mostly how you define yourself. How do you define a collector, the different type of collectors, I guess. And if I quote again, you say like, to be curious, careful, and passionate is not enough for collectors, and they have to do more than that, just than that.
So, I'll start talking. So, you know, it's incredible how stereotypes work at all levels, right? And I don't know, there's a lot of discussion about ethical questions in the art world, but collectors, they come in, but not as much as, you know, big funders. Like the small collectors, they're not really part of those discussion that much. But the question that we get all the time are two questions. Number one is, where does your passion come from? So it's all brought at the level of passion, sentiment, decadence, and this image of the collector on a Roman thing eating grapes, right? And the other thing they ask us is, that's great, you have a house in Anafi. No, we don't have a house in Anafi. We don't want a house in Anafi. They have wonderful rooms. We don't need a house in Anafi. So this concept that collector is necessarily someone that has passion and compulsive passion. I have many compulsions. Buying is not one of them. And also it's based not on research and on thinking and on dedication and work, but it's based on a sentiment. And of course, there's nothing wrong in passion and care and being motivated. But is it really just enough to build something solid today, don't you? So that's what we try to do. We try to bring a little bit of that.
We were at Vils in Brussels, and we were seeing a show that was a show of private collections. And I mean, Vils is a great museum, right, with a great program. So this exhibition was works that the director of Vils chose from private collectors. And there was a small catalog that goes there. So the catalog was really about how the passion of the collectors, how passionate the collectors were, and how curious. There was zero word about how much research they have done, how much they have actually tried to understand what's happening, how much, none of this. It was, I mean, when I want to talk about someone doing a public collection in a museum, the first word that comes to mind is not, oh, he's very passionate, or she's very passionate. It's like, they know what they're doing, they're doing a serious job, right? At least let us start trying to show that we can actually do a serious job. And you can critique it and you can say it's not serious, that's fine. But private collecting should go beyond the passion privée. Like, it's not private in the sense that art should not be private. Art to some extent, is something that we believe that has some public value, right? So it's not a private act. You are trying to make sure that the art continues, that you support the artist because you believe that art is important. You are there to make sure that the work continues and continues to be shown. And it's not just about being passionate about it. There's nothing wrong with being passionate, but let's move a little further than that.
Yeah. Maybe I quote you. I don't remember if it's something that you said or a question that has been asked to you, but it doesn't matter. So somehow I read that in one of your interviews that you said that the role of art somehow could play to deconstruct capitalist narratives that has convinced us that we kind of running after profits without being really regarding, you know, the social impact of our action, and somehow like those, you know, common narratives make us believe this is a natural human way of acting and behaving, and art could play a social work in that sense, like mixing, let's say, I don't know, interweaving practice and backgrounds, and just trying to find, like as you said, intelligent narrative. So how can you unfold that thought somehow?
He's the intelligent one.
You know, which is quite political, you know? But I mean, it was like in this.
I mean, to me, what is political is being here right now, right? Yeah, a group of people that are from very different backgrounds, coming from Manafi, coming from Athens. Some of them are artists, some of them are just friends of us. We are here, coming from Paris. Like, I think what art can create is this type of spaces where you can actually have a discourse. And it's more and more difficult to have a discourse in politics. It's more and more difficult to have a discourse in many places. I mean, it's not enough. Like, it's not about talking only. Like, we really need to move also beyond just having a political discourse and actually doing things, right? But, I don't know what we said about this capitalistic. I don't remember it, to be honest. I don't think I used the word capitalistic.
I think it was the journalist, though, yeah.
It's probably the journalist, yes. So,
probably what we're talking about is the fact that art, obviously there's political art and that's great, but we're also interested in an art that not necessarily first degree political, but also helps you looking at the conditions where certain mechanisms of power and regulation are constructed. So, you know, if you look at some of the artists that were in Phenomenon or they were in our collection, they do work on this sort of helping the viewer, just shifting the point of view, and then that is enough then to see the world differently and to challenge things that look natural and imposed as natural.
That's
and
what
you
I
can
meant.
Have a different
yeah.
point of view. Yeah.
About the collection, just to for the audience to have a clear idea, if we can, first I will simplify and you will tell us more. It's most of the artwork are following a conceptual legacy, if I can say that, which is mostly photography or artwork based on text, performance, video, mostly this type of artworks. And question also, what was your first artwork entering into your collection? And
First acquisition,
and how was it by the excitement?
Can I reply to your previous question, which was more interesting? I will come back to the first.
Conceptual legacy?
No, it was more about when you said that you don't understand what it means for a collector to be creative and socially engaged.
Yeah.
To me, that's amazing that you say that you cannot understand why a collector should be socially engaged and creative. Like, I don't think you would ask the same from anyone else in the art world, right?
Yeah.
So it is true that the collector comes from a very weird position because it's a position of power and it's a position of privilege, right? Because we are not making a living through art, where it's a kind of imposing a lot of power by our more monetary power, right? Not necessarily us, but big collectors can actually do it, can actually make or break careers, right? So it should be very clear from what position a collector actually talks, and this is very clear. At the same time, would it be much, I mean, I think there is a creative role that the collector can play by making their activities not only about acquisition of works, right? When we talk about ourselves as collectors, the acquisition of works is one of multitude of things that we do, including phenomenon. For us, phenomenon is part of us being collectors, right? It's not something which is aside, we are collecting and we're also doing phenomenon. The phenomenon is, the, in some sense, the public arm of what it means for us to collect, right? And to some extent, it is a creative endeavor in the sense that we're creating a concept, a context for the artist to actually create works, right? Being socially engaged, I think everyone should be socially engaged. So we have to deal with, we have to understand where we're coming from and what is the impact of what we do. Especially if we are going to a small island in the Cyclades, it would be insane if we don't try to understand what is the impact of what we are doing. And this is what, why we're having this long dialogue with the people from the island, to understand what are we doing well with them and what we should change, and what are their priorities in how they see their island and the problem. So yes, I think it should stop being a weird thing to say that the collector should be a creative and socially engaged agent. And now let's go to the next question, which was what did we buy
the first time we see first? Yes. So the first work we bought was from the Brazilian artists, the Botanical Line. I think they were here in Athens doing a conference attended maybe a year ago or so, a couple of years ago. Yeah, absolutely. And it's a piece called The World Justified, in which there's a map of the world expressed in lines, so designing lines. Yeah, no, it's them, but it's not that one. And then basically it's treated like a text, so it's all aligned left, on the right, center, and justified. So essentially you see all of a sudden the world changing shape and turning into like a text, which you know, we got really interested in systems of representation and how those they are created by men, and they have obviously a political impact, the way they were created to continue systems of regulation and control. And geography is one of them. And you're right, we're very interested, at least at the beginning. Now it's fluctuating, but at the beginning we were very interested in language, alphabets, geography, the passing of time, again, as man-made systems that made us believe, I mean, that we have come to believe that they're natural, but they're not, right? Maps are not natural, it's not representation of the world, and so is language. So,
yeah.
Everything was related to human fiction, something was completely built out of nowhere. So it was artwork which trying to deconstruct human structures.
Let's select. I won't make the distinction between the phenomenon and your collection, but I've read also somehow that you said that being a collector, it's also like the project. I don't remember. It's like collecting or like holding this phenomenon biennial, but it was something like an emancipatory exercise that we were talking about emancipation. Like, I'd like you to develop maybe a little bit on that matter. What does it mean to, for you? What does it mean to reach this kind of like state of being emancipated, like through art or through collecting? Well, I have the beginning of an answer to help you, like because it was related to this way of deconstructing binary, you know, constructs, or like it was mostly related to the last edition of Phenomenon, you know, like to go beyond, let's say, dialectic as periphery and center, north and south,
or citizens and refugees. So I guess it was like mostly related to the last edition of Phenomenon. But I mean, how come it could be an act of I don't know, freedom or like being emancipated somehow? I don't know.
It makes you laugh.
No, it is that it's. When you take things out of context, it's a little difficult to figure out where they came from. So now I'm like, wow, did we really say that? But
exercise of him, yeah.
I think the idea is that art can be a space where one can start creating emancipatory strategies and figuring out how to deal with all this. I don't think we said that we are getting emancipated through art. But
it was no, it was a bit provocative. But
yeah. But, yeah, maybe we give, I don't know, maybe we believe too much in the power of art to change the world. So maybe we are, at the end, we may be just very romantic. But to some extent, I don't know what else to do. Like, we've been in the streets, we've done this, we've done the direct action, we should continue to do the direct action.
Yeah.
How can we also use these possibilities here of just discussing and of talking and exchanging ideas, if not in an art context? I mean, I would be happy to have 10 other contexts where I can do that, but
no.
I don't find them, and I'm happy if people do, but I think for me it is some sort of emancipatory to be able to exchange with everyone. For now we are not exchanging because we are the only ones talking, and
soon,
we should
soon.
Change that.
Soon,
and,
soon.
Yes,
yeah,
soon we'll do it, but yeah, if we were believing in the possibility that through art you can make the world a better place, then we wouldn't be doing what we do.
And except for Phenomenon, you do other projects also, other exhibition. One of them is we have the catalog here. You can look. It's called. Multigenous Seas, which is also the title of another artwork by Denatico and Lam. So it was at Fondation Hippocrène in Paris.
Yes.
And maybe you can tell us more. And okay, maybe tell us also what you seem to have special relation this artist duo, Denatico and Lam, that they are joining you for all your adventures. So.
No, definitely. I think Andre and Raphael, they're very central in my collection. They've been there from the beginning, and they've also been doing all the covers for the catalogs and the posters of Phenomenon, right? But again, they're there with everyone else. And sorry, the other question was? Multitudinous Seas. Yes. So what happened is this foundation in Paris, the Fondation Hippocrène, invited us, they were interested in Phenomenon, invited us to do a show of Phenomenon, about Phenomenon, in Paris for the FIAC opening. So you can see between Anafi and Paris during FIAC, there's like, you know, we were a little destabilized and we actually were about to say no, we don't do it. We were about to reject him because we really didn't know how to approach this without it turning into sort of a tourist office exercise about Anafi. Mm-hmm. Or even worse, something like, oh, you were not there, so you don't understand how great it is. So there are all these risks. And actually what we did is, instead of saying no, instead of being paralyzed by fear, we actually asked the artists, and we made this the concept of
the
exhibition. So how can you possibly translate an experience so far away, so remote from central Paris into Paris? And one way that we looked at it is by trying to question these ideas of binary dichotomies, like center and periphery, because the more you talk about center and periphery, the more you accentuate the difference. So how can you actually work on the words and try to undo those binary constrictions? And so the artist worked on that. We were so happy because many people from Anafi also came all the way to Paris to see the show for us. It was a big honor, as it is today, to have them here. And so yeah, that's what happened. That's what happened for Multitudinous. We also showed, again, our collections of Not Phenomenon in Cyprus. Christodoulos Panayotou invited us at the Island Club. But we do also other activities. So as you can see, we publish books, and now we're translating Island Miles into Greek for the first time. So it's going to be...
When is it going to be released?
So it's going to be published on PTK, which is a magazine, a journal, a poetry journal. And then we're going to do a book. So Irene
Great.
Was very... they were very nice to accept, and so, you know, we were proud to bring this for the first time into the Greek language, and I think it's important someone like them to be also available for non-English speakers. So yeah, we do several other activities, and also we do a lot of research, so we're also focusing on research right now.
Which one? Yeah.
Do you want to talk about research?
I guess we're trying to understand how to start answering the questions that you were posing as well, which is what does it mean today to be a collector, and how can we first our idea is not to try to define what a collector should be, but actually undefine what a collector actually is. So starting by trying to break all this type of stereotypical descriptions of what a collector is. It's not very clear where it will go, but we do see that, for example, in the art world, there is much less talk about what it means to be doing things ethically, for example, than in other industries. So, for example, it's perfectly okay for a collector to buy a work and put it in a freeport in Singapore, and no one will ever see this work again. And this is perfectly fine. And really, like, why should it be fine? Or it's okay for a collector to just invest and flip the works about 6 months later and make money that never go back to the artist or the people who actually did the work. You know, there are many questions that one can... There are collectors, you know, they're the boards of museums, and then they show the private collections in the museum. So there are many things that one can discuss on what are the conflicts of interest, what should be some sort of rules of contact. And this is not trying to strangle the creativity and openness of the art world. Is exactly trying to make sure that the artists are not getting the raw end of the deal, right? And unfortunately, this is what's happening, because the power comes with where the money is. And
so, you know, I worked for many years in the pharmaceutical industry. Good cop. I was a good cop. In ethics, trying to make sure, you know, that patients weren't exploited or whatever you can imagine. And it was a hard, tough world out there. And I can tell you that if some of the things that I've seen or heard in the art world were happening in pharma, people would go to prison, right? So this is the level of wildness and wilderness that we have in the art world. And every time we talk about it, you know, the first reflex, we get a lot, oh, this is very neoliberal, code of conduct, la 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 la. It's very easy, right? But we're not talking about that. We know that there's a risk of regulation, there's a risk of over-regulation, strangling, as you say. But it's not possible that there's no sense of what are the boundaries of certain things, especially, not the creative side so much, but especially when there's a transfer of value and money being involved. For example, in pharma, you can never have a pharmaceutical company owning an hospital in which you only sell your pills, right? And if you look at some of the examples that we have in the art world, people that have big collections, big museums, big auction houses,
public funding.
That would not be really possible in many other sectors. So what's wrong? These are the questions we're researching on right now. We don't have an answer. And actually, looking back at some of the things that we did at the beginning, we would never do them again. We all have things in our cupboard. Huh? There's no one who's... But, you know, we move things forward and talk about it. More asking questions than giving answers, really.
Maybe this is the emancipating experience we were talking about before, no? Like to go further, and also a knowledge that we've been wrong somehow, and just like understanding things through time somehow. have another question?
But you see, you are on a researching phase, and I guess how you are collecting, and also what are you collecting next? I think, and so if you have already some, maybe you can just give you names. I don't know, but in which direction are you looking for? You said you. At the beginning, you were really focused on conceptual work, and now you are going somewhere else.
So, I don't think it's interesting for people to know the names, but I think definitely what we're doing now, and we've been discussing with many people that have been fantastic in helping, advising, getting feedback from Phenomenon about the collection. We work with a number of people, that's mainly in the room here, that's, you know, Gregory Castera back in Paris has helped us. So we use a lot of people as sounding boards and advisors. For us, it's very important to get opinions. And in collecting, what's going to be the next step for us is how do we get out of the conceptual art canon, which is obviously white male, American, la 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 la. And how can we remain true to what we think it's important, but at the same time breaking the bias and trying to look broader than what we've been looking so far, trying to understand our own canon and sort of a fetish and break it, essentially. So that's what we're working on. Successful? I'm not sure. We're not there yet by any means, but we are pushing the boundaries. It doesn't mean that we become politically correct and we start making algorithms about who we collect, and not at all, because that wouldn't be. But just removing the bias that make our decision look like natural. Sometimes we look at choices of words and we don't even we go towards the same, and that's dangerous, because what's happening there, it's too comfortable, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So that's what we're doing right now.
And I guess this goes back to when we say that collecting is not only about passion, in the sense that it's not about I like this, I don't like this. Like, there's a whole think behind why does one like this and why does one not like that, right? It's not something that comes naturally, that you should like this or you should. You're conditioned to like what you like, and you're conditioned to not like what you not like. And I'm doing some of these things in order to broaden what can affect you, right? I mean, what are you looking? I mean, what we're looking at that is somehow two things. It's like some sort of like sensory effect and also some sort of meaning making, right? So there are two things that we like to find when we look at that, but what affects us is not something that is always the same. It's something that has been constructed through what we have been through and what are our experiences. And by opening up and by talking to different people from different backgrounds, we are trying to figure out how to at least be aware of the fact of where does all this come from.
And we're also working on Phenomenon for definitely July 2021. Yeah, and possibly even some other Phenomenon activities before. We're in touch with Professor Kenna, you know, the anthropologist that dedicated her life to Anafi. She's sort of getting her archive ready to be donated, so we're trying to intervene before that happens and disappear in some boxes. So all this remains, you know, but definitely end of June 2021 for Phenomenon 4.
Good news, actually, we will try to be there. So, before giving the mic to the audience, if there's questions, can we say? Like, I have just one, not a question, but a reflection from her, like, because you using a lot the verb to undo, to disentangle, to deconstruct, so it's a bit of a process of like getting to the margins, you know, but also for yourself, not only for the, let's say, like the art that you could collect, but also as collector, as a practitioner, as like how do you build up your collection, and this is quite let's say a peculiar position, I would say, no? A fetish maybe, yeah. So getting out our comfort zone somehow. This is what I will remember from that talk. So maybe like it's very uncomfortable to talk, as I know. So I give the mic to who wants to talk. Actually, any questions? Yeah. We have only one mic, so it has to come back.
Can everyone hear me? It's really nice, like first and foremost, to hear collectors talking about being critical of what it means to be a collector, and also being aware of the fact that they have a social and political stance in the art world. So my question was kind of around, with something like phenomena, what are your metrics of for success? Like, how do you judge a good phenomena? Like, what are you looking for?
I love the sound of the mic.
So, yes. So, very, the participants, right? Have the participants found that it is was a valuable experience, right? Some of them talked about the derive using a situationist. So when you hear these things, or you know, someone like Eileen Miles came to us and said this was a life-changing experience. You know, Eileen Miles in her late 60s or early 70s, in their late 60s, early 70s, say something like this. That's the, you know, it beats all KPIs, matrices, and something like that. And systematically, we get this. Not everybody, but many people have that feedback. So for us, that's a matrix of success. Are the artists and the participants happy? And then the second, equally important, is are the people from Anafi happy? Right. Have they felt? It's been a journey, right? The beginning when we arrived there, obviously we didn't know them that much, and there's many people that come and go in the island historically. And for us, building the relationship was very much part of this. We hated the idea of going there, using the place as a postcard and leaving. And inevitably there's the risk, and you know, it doesn't matter how good you do it, there's always a little risk, and sometimes it turns into that, right? In certainly we don't mean it, but it can turn into that. And so, and we've seen the involvement of the locals, the openness growing through time, and so for us that's also a KPI, you know, key performance indicator, right? In the sense that the project, from a content perspective, also from a structure perspective, seems to be going in the right direction. But we're never happy, really. Yeah.
Maybe one more thing is what are the prospects for new things to happen after Phenomenon with the people that we spend this time there? Like, what are the new projects that are happening? How do we continue this thing that started with collaborating for a year? It kind of culminated with these 2 weeks of being there at the same place, but this is kind of not the end of the relation between them and between us and them. Like, there are many artists that do projects together afterwards because they met, they spent time there, they talked. So what comes out of it, not just during Phenomenon, but also after Phenomenon, is also something that for us, it's, if it happens, then it means that we did something.
Thank you for being so open and gracious about all your different capacities. I do have a question which might sound a bit rhetorical, and it might actually be, that's fine. You spoke very openly about this kind of dual position of private and public, private collection, public exhibition, and how you balance between the two. And I was wondering how this, the production of this show has actually affected your perception or understanding of ownership of art. Mm. And not necessarily the capitalist narrative type of way, but more in a, like, I buy, therefore I am, but more in a way of participating in a process of the production. And I mean, there's a famous Lawrence Wiener quote that says, anyone who knows my art owns it. And it feels like you're moving towards that direction.
Yeah, you're right. In the sense that for us, owning a work is only part of what it means to collect. Right? Like, spending a year working with an artist on something and spending time together, even if this is just going to the beach together or just discussing over dinner together, this is part of, in some sense, of of the collection, of the relation with the artist, right? So you're right, and the same way what you own, because we do also buy works as a way, as a means of supporting the artist. The work itself is completely different after you have, you know, you have experience and you have talked to the artist, for example. So we are collecting more than, I mean, we believe or we hope that what for us collecting is more than just acquiring the objects. It has to do also with the experience as well. And ownership, for us, we buy the works to support the artists, and we think it's our duty to make sure that they continue to exist and they continue to be shown. So it's not about owning it in the sense of I have it in my apartment, or even worse, I have it in a warehouse that no one ever sees it again. But it's one of the ways of supporting creation, basically.
And of course, the, as you said, I think for us what's really important is when the moment you acquire work, it comes with a whole sort of duties and responsibilities about it that we feel very strongly, and that's the thing we associate with ownership. But obviously, it's true that when you buy a piece, you support the artist, but it's also a commercial transaction. And the ethics of phenomena, the ethics of what we do without the commercial transaction, there's a different ethical dynamics to it, right? So we try to make sure that everything is clear and it's, and but yeah, owning is there, but for us it's not essential, very, very central. And you, for example, I was thinking when you were talking about Multitudinous Seas, they were not pieces of our collection, they were new productions that we made with the foundation from the artist of Phenomenon, and for Phenomenon as well, we try to produce new works. So there's this element always of, rather than owning, creating new works, new opportunities for the artist.
Anyone?
Question?
Okay. Hey. It's yeah, thank you. That's a really interesting talk. Yeah, all the questions coming from that, apparently. throughout your talk, you spoke often about how you were engaging the local community, and I just wondered if you could talk a little bit more specifically about that. You know, how were you actively engaging the local people? Were you involving them? How were you linking them with the artworks and with the artists themselves? Have there been any mistakes along the way? And is there anything you would like to improve on for the next phenomenon?
Yes.
We
can also ask the people from Anafi here.
Yeah.
So as I said, you know, in involving them, what we do since the beginning is that we present all the works that we want to show, at least the ones outside. Mm. And we work with them, and generally the mayor asks us to connect with a few people that are in charge of helping us. And for example, there's some volunteers that really want to come and help us, like Manos who's here, but everybody really does that. So we share with them what we want to do, we get feedback on whether it can be done, or how local sensitivity, whether things would, you know, people will go well or not go well. So we involve them a lot on that, and then also a lot of the, we inform them all the time on the new research that we come up with. For example, recently we brought to light a statue which originated from Anafi that was looted and taken all the way to St. Petersburg. And it came through Paris, and we did a lot of research at the Paris National Archives about all the paperwork to try and map how that statue ended up in Russia, right? And so we informed them, and we get encouragement from them to keep pushing, and then we share all the results that we give back. And also via Margaret Kenna, the anthropologist that we speak to Margaret basically almost on a weekly basis by email, and we also get her feedback on the history. So it's a web. It's more like a rhizome rather than a process, if you see what I mean. But for the next, what Jordanis was referring to, how do we make it more open? We're thinking about involving more the people from Anafi in relation, for example, the topics we need to explore, right?
Yeah.
The research of the island. There's so many topics in Anafi that can be researched and going deep. So which one they would like to for us to go more in depth? I think associating them directly straightforward with the artist selection. I don't know if it's, you know, we talk to them, we get feedback from them all the time. Maybe that will come with time. But for now, really, it's things that affect their island. Where do they want us to focus? Because also in choosing topics, we are doing a policy gesture, and we cannot do it without them, right? Does that make sense?
Thanks. Leading on from your question and exactly from the answer that we left off, I was wondering in what sense these pressing questions of the islanders, the people who are living in Anapu and who are occupying the land permanently, what questions do they have? Maybe I'm asking them in the wrong direction. Maybe we should.
Yes.
I'm curious to hear what issues are pressing there and how, what artists are working with those kind of issues and who is kind of talking about the things that need to be spoken about for the people who will see them. The majority is the locals, not tourists.
Yes. Yeah, we can.
I mean, we try to be very careful because we don't want to talk for them, right? So,
and also
maybe
the local politics.
Of interest to you for the next.
Yes.
So, for example, researching the history of the island—it's obviously something that is of interest to the islanders, okay? But also to us, because it's just a way of starting a broader discussion about many different things, like. But somehow, it's a very difficult question in the sense that it's very easy to go there and try to teach them things, and this is really not what we want to do. Like, we are not revealing the beauty, you know, the importance of art, right? So how do you interact in a way which is non-hierarchical in some sense? And it's not that we have a very clear answer to that, but what we try to do is that many cases the artists work with the locals, like they produce things with people that are from the island, whether this is in the ceramics workshop or in the bakery or in the people who do the honey. So there are people who are involved in the work of the artists or the performers and things like that. And then I think that our relation with the locals goes beyond what happens in Phenomenon now. Like, we are having conversations about what should the island do about the history of the exiles, which is there, but it's not there. Like, there are all these ideas, should we do a museum, should we do something, should we do an exhibition? And we are just saying that if they decide that they want to do something, we're here to help. So we don't want to make any decisions for them. We want somehow what we think, if everything goes well, what we hope is that Phenomenon shows that there are many things that themselves can actually do, right? If we can come to the island and do things with the island and on the island, it's possible. So there are possibilities there, and I think I'm really happy that the new generation of people in Anapu is taking matters in their hands. And I was just talking to Sofia, and she's like, I'm at the municipality now, and we are starting and we'll be doing things. And for us, this is the way it should happen. We are there to make sure that they can know that they can do things. It's difficult.
Yeah. It's messy.
I don't really have a question, but I have a comment in a way that it perhaps summarizes some of the things that we've talked about and the people that we've talked about. I've been following the Phenomenon since its previous edition. I've missed the first one. And I want to say that, first of all, when it comes to success is like already a notion that carries very specific connotations when it comes to how it's been built through time. So it already carries like a very wide masculine connotation. And I mean, to me, what is quite important with Phenomenon is that they're reevaluating the term of success, because success for them is a term for staying with the pain that being a self body or a self body with a certain dispossession comes with. And at the same time, because we also talked about it before, about experience. Experience etymologically comes from trying, and trying is a process of engaging loss and failure. So I think that the collector did never claim that they've never made like mistakes, but it's a matter of engaging with the mistakes, and engaging like with the mistake also creates a process of subverting the archive, which leads us back to the collector as a term, because a collector is someone who creates an archive and brings things together. So if you use your role as a collector as a way of creating alternative practices of sociability, for example in Anafi, and engaging the local community, but also as a way to subvert the archive through the people you invite, but also through other programs that you create, because they also had a great screening program. I mean, for me, it's already enough in terms of how we are in this position and how we trace the problems, our privileges, our non-privileges, etc., etc. So for me, it's kind of it would be quite accelerationist to say that now it's there and like let's create solutions, let's engage with the local community in the best way possible. Like whatever that can be, it's about like engaging with these questions and like not even raising them, engaging with them. Mm-hmm. So that's it.
Thank you.
Last word. Or?
If there's any final question, we'll take it. Yeah.
Any?
No, it's okay.
No. Well, thank you very much for everybody and.